Welcome to Horticulture Hangover on News Radio KLBJ. You're in the right place to get answers to all of your questions about your lawn, garden, trees, and more. Now, here's your host, Colleen Dieter.
Good morning, everyone. This is Colleen Dieter with ATXGardens.com. I'm a landscape consultant, and I help my customers by alleviating their anxieties about their yards. And I want to mention today, Diane Good, who is a customer of mine, listens to the show, and she had me come out this week and see her beautiful yard. And she's having a problem with her little dogs getting into the plants and stuff like that. So we talked about gardening with dogs last week. So I can come over to your house and help you too. Give you advice about what to do if you love gardening. And, you know, you have problems in your garden or with your yard, I can come over and help you and give you advice. Okay, I've got a text message from a listener already. This morning, you can call in or text me with your gardening questions at 512-836-0590. And this text message says, "Good morning, Colleen. I now have a lot of flowering plants for butterflies and was hoping to add butterfly host plants next year to make a butterfly habitat. What are some of your favorite butterfly host plants for Central Texas? You helped me with my yard a couple of times in the last few years, and I got so many compliments from my neighbors. The plants are doing great. Thank you so much for your advice. I love your show." Oh, thank you so much. That was really nice of you to say that. I really appreciate you. And so my favorite butterfly host plants, when we say host plants, y'all, we're talking about plants that the butterfly larva, or also known as caterpillars, can feed on when they're babies. So these are plants that we are intentionally planting for the caterpillars to eat. That's a really important part of butterfly gardening. So you can plant plants to feed the adult butterflies that will attract adult butterflies to the yard to eat. But it's important to support the whole life cycle of the butterflies if you're a butterfly gardener. And you can do that by planting host plants as well that are there for the caterpillars to eat. And so the first one that comes to mind is passion vine. And that is specifically for the Gulf fritillary butterflies because that is the only thing that their caterpillars will eat. And it's important to plant the native types of passion vines for them. There are sometimes tropical types available at the nurseries, but they can harm the butterflies. It's not what they're used to eating. So you have to get the native kind. The most common one is Passiflora incarnata, but it can get a little out of hand in the garden. It's an aggressive plant, even though it's native, can kind of take over. So you have to be careful with that. Also, of course, milkweeds, of all types of milkweeds, and I have a blog entry about different types of milkweeds on my website at atxgardens.com. The milkweeds are very hard to grow, very hard to come by, but they are the plant that the monarch butterflies need for their caterpillars. Monarchs are probably my favorite butterfly, And so I've tried really hard to get milkweed growing in my yard. And the tip that I always give for milkweed is, you know, get seeds, get plants whenever you see them, and have a designated place in your yard that you either flag or have a little fence around or some rocks around or something where that's the milkweed spot where you just keep trying to grow it there. And they come and go. The plants come and go often. It feels almost random of when the plants will suddenly just disappear, hopefully because the caterpillars are eating them. And then and you think that they're dead and you thought that you made a mistake, and then all of a sudden the plants just appear. So leave an open space for your milkweeds. That's the designated milkweed spot because they're really easy to lose. And the other thing I always say is to try to learn to identify the milkweed vines that grow around here. There's a couple different kinds that I know of, and then I think there's even more that I don't even know about. I have one that volunteered in my yard. I didn't even plant it. It came up on its own. It's called Taliote. I haven't seen any monarchs on it yet, but man, that is a really good plant, and it's definitely easy to mistake for a weed. So learn about Taliote, and also the pearl milkweed is the other milkweed vine that's really common around here that the monarchs can eat too. So there you go. And we've got some more text messages coming in here. And here's someone who recommended Corona de Cristo passion flower, saying that that's very easy to grow. So that's great. Thank you for the recommendation. That's great. And they'll eat all the passion flowers. There's native passion flowers that, you know, usually you can only get at the native plant sales, the Wildflower Center plant sale, that have very small flowers. But those are really good for the butterflies to eat. And here's another text message. Let's see what we have here. All right, looks like I'm getting some pictures in. Oh, I'm getting more customers texting me here. Thank you so much. This is really fun. Text message says, "Hello, Colleen. You came out for an appointment at my house in Central Austin. You identified this plant as a fall aster. I have never noticed many blooms in it. I read somewhere that fall asters in Austin may need to be cut back in order to prepare for fall blooms. They're about 2.5 feet tall now. Do I need to cut back? Thank you." No, yeah, those are tall asters. Not the fall type. And there's a picture here of the dried blooms from last year. And no, you don't need to cut them back now. They may even bloom short here in May. Sometimes the asters bloom in late spring and early summer, like May or June, especially when we've had a lot of rain like this. So see if they bloom in the next month or so. And then they'll just be tall like that all the time. And then in the fall, they'll put on their big bloom at that time. It's usually October and November. And then when they're finished blooming at that time, you can cut them down. So really the time for cutting them down is in the winter, in December or January or February. Then you can cut down the asters. So that's the right time. So thank you so much for your question. And it's great to hear from y'all, from my customers. It's a lot of fun. I love that you're staying in touch with me through the show. And so tomorrow I will be on a panel of arborists at the Tree Folks 3rd annual Keep Austin Rooted picnic at Live Oak Brewing. That's May 5th, 2024, from 11:30 to 3:30. And y'all can join us. It's a fundraiser for Tree Folks. They're the local tree planting and tree education nonprofit, and they are partners with my organization, Central Texas Seed Savers. And you can get a ticket at treefolks.org/picnic. And I'll be there giving tree advice with a couple other arborists. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And with the ticket, you get, I think you get a meal and a couple of drinks. And kids are invited as well. So that's the Tree Folks' third annual Keep Austin Rooted picnic at Live Oak Brewing. treefolks.org/picnic. And, boy, I'm just loving all this rain, y'all. It's a lot of fun. But it's starting to get a little buggy out there. So people are always asking me about plants to keep bugs away, like mosquitoes and stuff. But I don't really believe that that's a thing. It must be on the internet. People ask me all the time. But the best thing to do is wear long sleeves, wear long pants, and use bug spray on your body. And then if you can put a fan where you're sitting, if you're resting or, you know, chilling out in the yard, have a fan blowing on you to make it harder for the bugs to land on you. But we're about to go to commercial here, and so I'll see you all after the break.
This is Horticulture Hangover with Colleen Dieter. Call or text your lawn and garden questions to 512-836-0590.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I'm coming around. I'm starting to wake up now. Here I am. Thanks for listening. I'm Colleen Dieter. I'm a landscape consultant and certified arborist at atxgardens.com. My company is called Red Wheelbarrow. And, you know, I was talking about Diane, a customer that I saw this week who listens to the show. And she had a problem that's really, really common, especially this year, where her yard just got kind of overgrown. She wasn't able to get out there and garden as much as she usually would. And with all the rain that we've had this year, everything's growing so fast. So I helped Diane kind of sort through which plants to keep, which plants to transplant, which plants to take out, you know, talking about all the different options. You know, and a lot of folks are still dealing with plants from the 2021 snowpocalypse that, you know, died partway and then are struggling to grow back, or from the 2023 winter storm, February 2023 ice storm, that just aren't thriving, you know. And trying to figure out, you know, it's mostly woody plants that got damaged in those storms. And so sometimes the top of the plant will die and they start growing back from the ground. And now they're multi-trunked when they used to just have one trunk. This is a really common problem. And trying to figure out what the new shape of that plant will be, and trying to trim them and shape them up, that's something that I can help you with in a consultation. And, you know, some folks, you know, trimmed off all the dead parts of the plants, and then what's left is kind of like this odd shape. I think you probably know what I'm talking about. Where maybe there's like a main trunk that's tall but then stubby at the top, and then there's a bunch of shoots coming out from the ground and stuff like that. And it's just looking really funky and not sure what to do. That's something I can help with. And also I can give you a tip that for for plants that are not shade trees, so if we're talking about shrubs and small trees, like the understory trees, the trees that naturally would grow under larger trees, you can take out big trunks, like the biggest main trunk, if it's just stubby and it's not doing anything, or there's just a few leaves coming off of it, you can cut that down with those types of plants and force the plant to grow back from the ground. I'm also seeing a lot of plants that are finally kind of failing. You know, they're finally giving up the ghost, basically, after struggling through the winter storms and the drought and the heat. And a lot of them, when they freeze, a lot of plants, you know, woody plants, when they freeze, they get wounds, right? Because the ice inside the plant expands, right? So the water inside the plant freezes and it expands when it turns to ice, and it busts open the tissues of the plant. And so then the plant gets wounded. Well, those wounds can get infected. And it takes a long time for the woody plants to seal over those wounds. And with all the challenges of a second winter storm and drought and heat, well, that leaves them really vulnerable to diseases. So we're seeing a lot of trees and shrubs now that are finally, you know, just declining because they had all these wounds. Some of them got infected and now they're succumbing to fungal infections and things like that. So, you know, some of these plants need to be removed even, you know, a year, 18 months later. So keep that in mind. That's a common thing that I'm seeing. And it's never just one thing that kills a tree. It's usually a combination of factors like this. So it sends them on the spiral of mortality, is what arborists call it. Now, if you have a big shade tree like an oak or something like that, that's a different story. You can't just cut huge branches off willy-nilly on an oak tree or an elm. On the shade trees, the trees that get really, really big, because it's really, really important for them to have structural integrity. So if you have one of those that's ailing, you really need to have an arborist come and take a look, a certified arborist, take a look at it to tell you if it's going to be okay or not. But for the little trees, small trees, things like crepe myrtles, vitex, you know, a lot of people had damage to their ligustrums, hollies, plants like that, Texas mountain laurels, you know, those are the ones where you can do a lot of trimming on them to help steer them in the right direction and rehabilitate them and make them look better. So that's the kind of thing that Diane and I talked about this week when I visited her house. So I so appreciate y'all listening. I appreciate Diane listening and calling me to come out, and appreciate my customers who texted me this morning. And you can text me with your gardening questions or call in with a gardening question if you're feeling brave at 512-836-0590. Earlier, we had a question about my favorite host plants for butterfly caterpillars. And I'm a big butterfly gardener at my house. I have a butterfly garden. And I'm often surprised to find caterpillars on plants that I didn't know were host plants. So there's so many different kinds of caterpillars, and a lot of them can eat many different kinds of things. So you'd be surprised how many common plants are host plants too, like oaks. You know, we don't think about it, but oak trees host a lot of different kinds of caterpillars. And they're really important to have in the landscape. And then we've got, I was surprised to see caterpillars on my Virginia creeper vines that just volunteered in my yard. The Virginia creepers just came up on their own, and they have a lot of caterpillars on them, and that's a lot of fun. And I use the iNaturalist app to identify the caterpillars so that I'll know what type of butterfly is going to come from them. So most of the caterpillars, most of the nectar plants can also serve as host plants too, like mist flowers. So Krista is on the phone, but we got to go to a break. So Krista and Eileen, both of you called at the same time right before the news. So we're going to go to the break, and Krista and Eileen, please hang on the line. You're going to be on hold for a while, but we'll get you after the news. Thanks so much.
Welcome to Horticulture Hangover on News Radio KLBJ. You're in the right place to get answers to all of your questions about your lawn, garden, trees, and more. Now, here's your host, Colleen Dieter.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Colleen Dieter. I'm a landscape consultant with atxgardens.com. And I've got Krista on the phone from Dripping Springs. Good morning, Krista. Thanks for holding.
Well, thank you. My question is, as I water my garden this spring, I'm seeing a lot of cobwebs on the ground.
Oh.
And a lot of them. And they'll even cover up a low-growing plant, you know, like a sedum. They'll just completely cover the plant with the web, and I've been getting sticks and pulling off the webs, but I don't know what insect this is doing this.
Yeah.
And is it bad?
Okay. Are you noticing any damage on the plants that, like, are the plants that are covered with the webs, are they turning yellow?
No damage to the plant.
Okay.
At all that I can see.
Okay. Sounds to me like you've got a healthy population of spiders. Which is good. And there are some types of spiders that build their webs on the ground. And I think that's okay.
In 25 years, I have never seen that. Or I have never seen this. So that's why I'm puzzled.
Yeah.
The volume, the amount, you know, of these things.
Yes. Yeah. I think you're right by, you know, using a stick to uncover the plants that are getting covered, so that you're sure that the plants that are getting good airflow, air circulation, and enough light, you know, you don't want the webs to block that. But otherwise, I wouldn't worry about it too much. And I think it's probably going to run its course here. I don't think it's going to last, you know, much past June 15th when it stops raining.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Krista, it's just some of the fun parts of gardening. Discovering like all the critters that want to come and help you out. And the spiders are good to have because they're eating all the other bugs.
Well, so that's kind of how I looked at it. I thought, something getting caught in this web is protecting my plants.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, Krista. Happy gardening.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, and up next we have Eileen in Georgetown. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning, and thanks for helping.
Oh, yeah.
I have, I think it's called a VTEC or VITEC tree or shrub. I'm not really sure what they are.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a shrub.
Yeah.
And I understand that they grow, excuse me, they grow very large, and I don't want them to be very large.
Oh, yeah.
Can they be pruned?
Oh, absolutely, Eileen. Yes, the Vitex can be pruned. They are essentially small trees, you know, where they're going to get at the tallest about 12 or 15 feet tall, and they can get really wide, too. They're such vigorous, fast-growing plants that you really can do what's called stooling, where you cut the tree down every year basically, and it'll grow back from the ground. So it's almost like treating it like a perennial, where you just every winter cut it down and force it to grow back. And that way you can keep it small.
Oh my.
Yeah.
they're not in the right place to be huge
yes.
trees.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but you can definitely trim them to control their size. I have a couple of customers that do that where they cut them all the way down every year in the winter to keep them smaller. Even cut the top half off in the winter to keep them small.
Oh, my gosh. They are really vigorous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they are. Yes. Yeah, they're very aggressive growers. So don't be afraid.
I've never heard of cutting the top of a tree and that being beneficial.
It's only for Vitex. I don't recommend it for other species. It's really only for the Vitex. Yep.
Okay, so I can cut it in half in the winter.
In the winter, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Very interesting.
Yes. I know.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Eileen.
I appreciate the program.
All right, great. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's the only plant that I recommend doing that with on a regular basis in terms of woody plants. Is the Vitex. And there's a couple different kinds of Vitex. There's a little Vitex called Beach Vitex that's different. That is like a little shrub. But the regular Vitex, also known as the chaste tree, gets to be a medium-sized tree. You know, it's like if you let it go, it'll get like 15 feet tall and very, very wide. They have multiple trunks, you know, but they grow really vigorously, really fast. So I definitely treat them more aggressively. I'll treat them more like a perennial where we'll just cut the whole top off in the winter and force it to grow back so that it's smaller. But I don't recommend that with many other species. Vitex is really the only one. And it can be really nice to cut them down. If you have one that's really, really big and old, they start to look really ratty. You know, they get woody and the flowers are way up at the top of the branches. You don't really get to enjoy the blooms as much. And yeah, don't be afraid to cut off on the really huge old ones. You can cut off the biggest trunks and force the whole plant to be smaller and shorter. That is okay with something like a Vitex, similar to fruit trees in that way. So let's see, I've got a couple of text messages. Thank you all so much for listening and participating. Okay, here's someone who sent me a picture of a butterfly, and it says, an abundance of these this year. Do you think so too? Also, white dragonfly parked on my Asian jasmine on elevated porch. I nearly bumped it with my nose. It was so close. It stayed in the same position till dark and flew away. I just thought, how special, with a smiley face emoji. Yes, lots of butterflies this year. There's and a lot of really fun encounters with dragonflies and the insects this year coming out because of all the rain and the relatively mild winter, except for a couple of really cold nights we had. So it's been really fun to see our butterfly friends bouncing back, and these white ones with the black spots are having a population explosion. I cannot remember what they're called right now. I will look it up during the commercial break, which is coming up shortly here, but I've just been delighted as a butterfly gardener myself. I've also been enjoying a lot of the native bees, bumblebees coming out. They're just starting to come out now, so that's been a lot of fun. But yeah, I've been really happy with the butterflies this year. I've had a lot of buckeyes and buckeye caterpillars and adults in my yard. and painted ladies and variegated fritillaries and stuff like that. So we're going to go to the break now and we'll be right back. Thanks.
This is Horticulture Hangover with Colleen Dieter. Call or text your lawn and garden questions to 512-836-0590.
Good morning, everyone. We're having a great time today on Horticulture Hangover, talking a lot about bugs and butterflies and great stuff. And so someone else texted in that they are also seeing webs on the ground as well, mainly in the grass. And yeah, that's most likely spiders, could be, you know, all kinds of caterpillars and stuff like that. But if you're not seeing any harm to your plants, don't worry about it. You know, they're just doing their spider thing. I am expecting to see outbreaks of spider mites coming up here this time of year when it starts getting hot and it's very, very humid outside. This is the time of year in Austin, Central Texas, where we start to see a little bug called their mites. They're not spiders. They are mites, but they build a web around the plant while they're eating. And so your plant might start to look kind of dirty. It may have a web around it. It'll look kind of yellowy weird. That's signs of spider mites. And they can be controlled with a strong stream of water or just a little bit of insecticidal soap if you start seeing spider mites on your plants. And there's some plants that are very susceptible to spider mites more than others, but it's getting to be that time of year where we're going to start seeing spider mites and whitefly, scale, the little insects that are going to come and start sucking the juice out of your plants. So if you see webbing on your plants and the plants look fine, don't worry about that. That's probably just regular spiders. But if you see webs on your plants and the plant looks bad, then you may have spider mites. And you can just rinse the plant off. So keep that in mind, y'all, going forward. And my friend Steve and Leander texted in too with a picture of a butterfly. It's a checkered white butterfly. He said that he has a lot of those at his place. So that's really cool. I have at my house, I'm having a lot of salt marsh moths. And they are also black and white, and their caterpillars are all over the place, and they are eating all of the plants. No problem, though. I have plenty of plants, and plants are growing so much that they are welcome to dine at my house. They've been eating sunflowers at my house. I have wild sunflowers that came up. I don't know how they got there. I might have planted them from seed. I don't remember. But they come up from seed all over the yard every year. And sometimes they get out of hand, the sunflowers. This year, there's lots of sunflowers, but these little caterpillars have been helping me. They've eaten so many of the sunflowers that I'm kind of glad about it, because I usually have to pull out of the sunflowers. This gets to be too many sometimes. So that's been nice. Thank you, salt marsh moths. They grow up to be little butterflies that have white wings with black spots, and their heads are furry. And yeah, so that's been fun seeing them this year. They're all over the place. I've seen them all over town, actually. Their caterpillars are little black woolly worms. So let's see. I got another text message asking, what's the best way to help lantana bloom? And that's a great question. So it's still early for lantanas, y'all. So mine are still growing back. You know, they really don't start blooming till usually May 15th, I think. There might be some blooming around town, but it's still a little early, so they're going to get there soon. They need full sun. You know, if they're in the shade, they're not going to bloom as much. They'll bloom a little bit, but not much. So if they're in the shade, manage your expectations. And I've, with a lot of my customers, recommended transplanting lantanas that are in the shade to full sun. So that's important. And then make sure, you know, that the soil's well drained. That's important, that they're not standing in real heavy clay. They can tolerate that, but if they're turning yellow, that can be a sign that the soil is a little too heavy for them. And that's a pretty common problem around here. So see what you can do about that. And then here's another text. That says, you gave a good explanation of bluebonnets. I wanted to know about bluebonnet seeds in a packet, how and when to plant them. Sure. I can definitely repeat that from a few weeks back. Yeah, I'm so happy to help with bluebonnets. And y'all, it's getting to be time to collect bluebonnet seeds. But don't plant them until September or October. Take the seeds, pour boiling water over them in a strainer to break the seed coat, and then plant them. Rake the soil, throw the bluebonnet seeds down on the ground, and step on them so that they get good contact with the soil. But that's not until October, you know, September or October. This time of year, just leave your bluebonnets so that they can go to seed. They're done blooming now, but you have to leave the plants so they can make seeds. And this is Colleen Dieter with ATXGardens.com, and I so appreciate all of y'all listening. And we're at the end of the show, so I will see you next week. Thanks.